Well, thank you, Greg and team. Trust that you know today that you are loved by the God of the universe. Great to have you here, whether it's your first time here this morning or you've been coming for years. And hope we can hang out at the barbecue afterwards. We've got a great day for that. I've got two books up here, two sacred texts. And the one here on my left, your right, is considered one of the most important books in the world, particularly in wealthier cultures. It's considered, like I said, almost a sacred text, a ritual, a rite of passage during the teenage years who will read this. And not only read it, but they will diligently study it. It's been translated into numerous languages around the world. It varies slightly in its edition from country to country, or in our case, province to province, or down in America, from state to state. So what is the title of this holy revered text that gets so conscientiously examined during the teenage years? Well, the general title is, why don't we stick it up on the screen, The Rules of the Road, you know? Or in BC, we call it here, Learn to Drive Smart, you know, which is very interesting because the teenage boy is driving, but he's looking backwards in the picture here. So Learn to Drive Smart, The Rules of the Road, it's generally called around the world. And I've got a copy of this esteemed text here in my hand. And I also have a 16-year-old daughter who, if she conscientiously studies the material within this text and passes the exam, in the words of Elmer Fudd, if you're out on the road, be very, very careful. So now Kelsey is kind of conscientious as we're driving around, and she'll ask me certain questions, or I'll quiz her on certain things. And so the other day we came up to a four-way stop near our home. And so I allow the other car to go first, and I went and I said, Kelsey, what if both of the cars had come up to the four-way stop at the same time? Which car would get to go first? And she said, well, the one that got there first. I said, no. If they came at the very same time, the exact same time, came to the stop sign, who would get to go first? And the answer, you know, of course, shouted out.
None, because it's not a four-way stop.
Yeah. There you go. That generally, it's the one on the right-hand side, eh? So that's the way it's supposed to be, you know? And so sometimes we'll come up to certain traffic signs. Mark, why don't we stick it up on the screen there? So again, I'll kind of quiz her on that. Like, what does that mean, you know? And so she'll, you know, and then I'll explain to her, hey, if you're in the right lane, your lane is going to end. So you've got to merge into that left lane. Or if we're driving on King George Boulevard and we see this sign, you know, what does that mean? Shout it out. It doesn't mean anything, right? This is King George Highway we're talking about. Nobody's going 70, right? You know? So, but generally there's rules of the road that we follow. Now, just like there are signs to guide our driving, there's also signs in the rules of the relationships, signs which you and I need to be aware of. Researcher Daniel Stern, he calls this ability to read and respond to other people's hearts. He calls that attunement. Everybody say that word, attunement. Attunement. It's the idea of getting in tune with what is happening in the relationship, right? So it's knowing one's own heart and then knowing the other person's heart and knowing the relational signals, the relational rules that are happening in that relationship. You know, so it's, you know, something like that happens from earliest age, you know. So like a little girl like this at the front here, you know, grandma and grandpa will be watching her. And so she will give certain signals, right? So if she squeals with delight, then, you know, Bill will look down and he'll smile, you know, and she'll know, okay, when I do that, that makes grandpa smile. You know, and so we've got this in parent-child relationships and all sorts of relationships, this idea of attunement. And relationally intelligent people are aware of the signs and they can read those signs. Now, some people, it almost seems like they're tone deaf, right, to the signs that others are putting out. So just like there are street signs on our roads, John Ortberg suggests that there are also relational road signs that we need to navigate as well as we attune ourselves in relationships to be aware of these signs that other people are putting out. So why don't we put the first sign up on the screen there? And that's the stop sign. Have you seen this sign in a relationship recently? Stop. Stop talking. Stop gossiping. Stop speaking. Stop rambling. Stop giving me advice. Stop hogging the conversation. Just stop. Proverbs 10:19 says, "Too much talk leads to sin. Be sensible and keep your mouth shut." Now, it's very easy to run through this nonverbal relational stop sign. How do we know when somebody's putting up the stop sign? We look at their eyes, right? Because, you know, when somebody wants the conversation to come to a stop, they will kind of, with their eyes, you know, glance away, glance down, eyes will start glazing over, whatever it may be. You know, and they're putting out the stop sign, right? So some of you parents who Kim encouraged to go down at 11:20, you know, at 11:15, maybe what you want to do is start glazing the eyes over, you know, just look really bored. And I will read that, you know, as a relational stop sign and know to stop my message or not. You know, I've been reading through the Gospels along with 20 other grace pointers through this series. And as I've been reading, I've been struck again by Jesus's, not only was he a teacher, like in the sense of like what I'm doing now, but also a great listener, that he listened to people. He asked questions and he dialed in to their hearts and what was on their hearts to become attuned in their relationships. And what about you and I, the same thing? To be able to stop, to be able to ask questions, to be able to listen with an open mind, a non-judgmental mind. Okay, another sign that we encounter in life is the construction zone sign. Proverbs 15:1, I put on your outline, it says, "A soft answer turns away wrath." Now the word soft here doesn't mean a weak answer or evasive answer, rather it means a mindful answer. A soft answer, a mindful answer. The idea that we're mindful. We're mindful in our posture. We're mindful in our words. We're mindful in our listening to what's happening in this conversation. Because every person, in a sense, is under construction, right? We're all under construction. Every relationship is under construction. And so we got to proceed with caution through construction zones. Because each person, we're either filling their emotional tank or we're withdrawing from their emotional tank. A relational intelligent person can notice the caution sign and proceed accordingly. Or the next sign. When I show my daughter this sign, again I ask, hey, what does this mean? You know, what does it look like for two cars to join? You know, to merge together or to yield. And sometimes it means waiting. Other times it means, you know, alternating. Ephesians 5:21 says, "Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ." And that means being an active peacemaker in relationships. As Pastor Chris reminded us 2 weeks ago, that it takes our intentionality, our desire to recognize in a relationship that we have an active part to play. And sometimes it means slowing down to recognize, okay, to merge here, to yield here, what does that look like in this relationship? Sometimes it means to stop and to say, I'm sorry, or I was wrong, or admitting fault. It's not being so much concerned with one's rights as one's responsibilities in the relationship, and then exercising mutual submission. Or a fourth and final road sign. The road closed. Have you seen this one in a relationship? It could be a temporary closure or a permanent closure. Jesus said in Revelation 3:20, "Here I am, I stand at the door and I knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with them and they with me. This idea that Jesus is waiting, we have a choice to open our hearts to him or not. He won't force his way in. And just like in relationships also, sometimes people put out the stop sign and other times they put out the road closed sign. Like I said, sometimes it can be permanent, like in a dating relationship. When the person doesn't respond to your texts or return your calls, they're perhaps putting out that road closed sign. They're just not into you. It's time to move on. Other times it might be a temporary closure. You know, it's kind of like it's exam time now and report card time. You know, and so maybe parents, your kids bring a report card home and the report card isn't all that great. And so you kind of lay into your kid like, hey, you know, what's going on here? You know, they put up the stop sign. You know, are you going to see the body language when they put the stop sign out? Or they put up the road closed sign as a parent continues to lay into their child. And again, a relationally attuned parent will be wise to notice, okay, the kid is putting out the road closed sign here. This is temporarily closed. Maybe I need to find another road to go down in this conversation. Maybe we'll sleep on it one day, you know? Maybe tomorrow night it'll be asking more questions rather than launching into a lecture. The road closed sign. Four potential signs in relationships. The rules of the road, the rules of relationships. Now, Jesus taught us there's one main rule when it comes to relationships. There are multiple rules when we're on the road that we need to obey, but one main rule, and we want to finish off our Jesus-shaped relationship series by looking at Jesus' one rule. And he said, this is the summary. This is the summary of the entire Old Testament. Now, before we talk about this one main rule and what it is, let's talk about what it is not. Because sometimes we have a wrong idea about Jesus' main rule. And sometimes we kind of treat the one rule as the ricochet rule. The ricochet rule, which might be defined as do to someone what others have done to me. And so this ricochet rule, you know, views relationships as this kind of ricochet that goes back and forth saying, I'm going to treat others how I've been treated. So if an ex-spouse treats me a certain way, I'm going to treat my current spouse that way. Or, you know, we're all products of our family of origin. And so we grew up in a certain family and love was displayed certain ways and kindness certain ways. And we think, okay, that's what I'm going to do now as an adult. And so we have this ricochet that goes back and forth in relationships. And there's an old story that kind of demonstrates this. I'm sure you've heard of it. The boss, you know, is grouchy one day. Employee comes in to ask something and the boss just kind of lays into the employee. Well, the employee's all upset. He goes home, and at the end of the day, his wife asks him, "Oh, how was work today?" And he's all mad, upset, and he kind of takes it out on her. Well, then Johnny, the son, comes into the kitchen, asks when supper is ready, and then she takes it out on Johnny. And he's all upset because mom is mad at him and he doesn't know why. He's walking down the hallway. Then the sister comes in and she asks where the Wii U controller is. And he gets all mad at his sister about that. And then she gets upset. And so she's walking into the living room. She sees the dog. What does she do? She kicks the dog, you know. And the dog's all mad because he's getting kicked. What does he do? He sees the Barbie doll in the corner. So he grabs the Barbie doll and bites the head off the doll. Now, it would have been better off if the boss had gone into work and taken a Barbie doll and bitten the head off the Barbie doll, right? Because all the rest of the relationships wouldn't have ricocheted back and forth like that. There's a ricochet rule. There's also the reciprocal rule. The reciprocal rule. Everybody say that word reciprocal. You know, it says, what you do for me, that's what I'll do for you. You know, and we're well aware of this rule, right? You scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. And many people in our world live by this rule. You extend kindness to me, I'll extend kindness to you. You don't invite me, I won't invite you. You know, and so we sometimes talk about in relationships about owing, right? Hey, we owe you, you know, we owe you to have you over. I owe you coffee or I owe you lunch. And there's nothing wrong with reciprocating kindness. The challenge is when we kind of equate that kindness then with grace. Or we equate it, sorry, more correctly, with something that a person needs to earn, right? So they've got to earn, in a sense, that our love. Then it's not we're doing loving things out of a heart that's filled with God's love, but rather we're doing it because we think we owe them. They did it for us. We owe them back. And it involves a lot of waiting then, right? And well, as we'll see shortly, in Jesus' rule, it's not about waiting. It's about taking the initiative. But in the reciprocal rule, it's about waiting. You know, hey, I'll do that when they do that to me first. Or a third rule might be the hidden motive rule. I'm acting like I'm doing this for you so I can get what I want. It appears genuine, right? On the surface, on the outside, it looks good. But it comes from a hidden motive or a hidden agenda within somebody's heart. It's not a genuine love because I'm filled with Jesus' love, but it's rather, hey, I'll give in order to get. I'll love in order to be loved back. And why don't we stick Mark an image up there from Fraser Highway. And chances are you've driven by this image. Have you seen it at Fraser Highway in like 155 or whatever? You've seen the boat store? Yeah, yeah. You know, your wife said yes. That's been up there quite a while, and I'm assuming it's working for them because they haven't changed the signage there in quite a while. You know, your wife said yes. It's appealing to men to think, okay, I want to get the boat, but my wife may not want the boat. Oh, but she said yes, and no doubt there's been a few men who have driven by that and thought, okay, how can I get my wife to say yes? You know? And that's when the hidden motive rule kind of arises within our hearts, right? And we think, oh, okay, what is my wife really like? Oh, okay, well, maybe if I bought her a vacation, you know, and said, hey, we're going on holidays, honey. Or maybe as they're driving along and they come to 152nd, they say, Guilford Mall is up here. Why don't I go to the mall there and maybe buy my wife some jewelry? And then as I'm giving her this lovely golden necklace, I'll kind of slip into the conversation that I bought a boat. You know, this idea that, hey, I'm giving out of an ulterior motive, you know. Some of you married men, maybe you didn't get what you wanted for Father's Day. Has God given you a sign today? Let me know how that works out for you. So, okay, one other rule. We've got the silver rule. Why don't we stick it up on the screen, Mark? It's very similar to the golden rule, but notice the difference. Do not do unto others as you would not have them do unto you. This rule appears in antiquity in many, many places. Almost every major world religion or philosophy of life has some sort of variation of this. The Jewish Rabbi Hillel, he said, what is hateful to yourself, do not do to someone else. Confucius said, what you do not want done to yourself, do not do to others. The ancient Greek king Nicolaus said, do not do to others the things which make you angry when you experience them at the hands of other people. Or Epictetus, the Greek philosopher, said, what you avoid suffering yourself, do not inflict on others. Or the Stoics promoted the idea, what you do not want to be done to you, do not do to anyone else. So we see lots of these variations, like I said, in ancient literature, many of them predating Jesus, which talk about kind of the golden rule in the negative form, which is often called the silver rule. Now, Jesus, when he came along, he didn't teach the silver rule. He didn't teach the hidden motive rule, the reciprocal rule, or the ricochet rule. He taught the golden rule. So let's take a look at it. Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. Some of you are thinking, wow, that was a long introduction to the text here, Rick. And I'm thinking, that's inductive preaching, my friends, because if I would have started with the text, you'd be like, hey, what else you got? Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. Jesus says here, so in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets. How many of you in your translations you got law and prophets in capital letters? The L and the P there. Okay, yeah, many of the Bibles have that in capital letters, indicating, okay, this is a summary of the entire Old Testament. Now, when we read the scripture on Tuesday morning at staff gathering, Johnny, one of our interns, you know, read it, looked at it, and said, this summarizes the whole Old Testament? You got two-thirds of the Bible? You got this whole grand redemptive story all the way from creation in Genesis chapter 1 and then the fall, you know, and then the Exodus and the prophets and all of that, the great salvation story through thousands of years, and it gets summarized by one statement, do to others as you would have them do to you, and there's no mention of God. Why would Jesus do that? Why don't we read it in its context? Some of the verses that appear before it as part of the Sermon on the Mount, the greatest sermon that was ever delivered. And before we read this summary statement, let's read verses 7 to 11. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, the one who seeks finds, and the one who knocks, the door will be opened. Which of you, if your son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a snake? If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? So in everything, do to others what you would have them to do, for this sums up the law and the prophets. So we see there the context, right? Jesus is saying, in light of your generous heavenly Father, in light of the one who gives you good gifts, he's not a miserly Father, he's generous. You can ask, you can seek, you can knock. You can have this active, dynamic relationship with him. And as you live, you know, praying bold prayers and living in this dynamic relationship with your heavenly Father, as you do that, then you can live out the horizontal relationship of do to others as you would have them do to you, based upon that vertical relationship. Does that make sense? You know? And then verse 12 doesn't just become some statement that we stick on a t-shirt or a coffee mug, or that any person in the world, regardless of their religion or even if they believe in God or not, follows. Hey, do to others as you would have them do to you. That it's deeper than this. That Jesus is calling us to abide in his love. And as we abide in that love, then we can live out the golden rule. What makes the golden rule different from some of the other rules that I mentioned? Well, we live out the golden rule, doing to others, regardless of the outcome, right? Regardless of what's going to happen. There's no expectations like there are in some of the other rules that I mentioned that are lesser rules. We live as golden rule lovers regardless of what the other person's going to do or not do. Whether they reciprocate or not reciprocate. Whether they ricochet that love or not ricochet that love. We do it because we're filled with God's love. And it's based upon grace, right? It's not an earning kind of love. It's not like, hey, we're going to do this in order to get something, in order to get somebody's approval or them liking us. No, we're filled with God's love, and out of that filling of God's love, then we live out the golden rule. See, if we wait for the other person, or often we get caught up in relationships of thinking, oh, you know, why do I have to go first? Or why is it my turn? Or, well, what about my needs being met here in this relationship? And when we do that, we just kind of spiral down then. You know, it becomes a law-based way of living rather than a grace-based way of living. You know, and so we say things like, hey, I'm not making coffee this week at work because, you know, I'm always making coffee. I made coffee last week like three times. And how come the other people here aren't making their share of coffee? You know, or we think in our families, like, I'm not unloading the dishwasher. It's not my turn. It's someone else's turn to unload the dishwasher. Yeah? Where do we see in the golden rule anything about taking turns, right? It's about do to others. We take the initiative to do. I love the way the message puts it. Why don't we stick it up on our screen there? Let's read it together. Here's a simple rule of thumb guide for behavior. Ask yourself what you want people to do for you, then grab the initiative and do it for them. This idea that, yeah, we grab the initiative. We say, hey, I'm going to do it because God has called me to do this. God has filled me with His love, so I'm going to do it. And we do it to everyone, right? It's not just certain people. When Jesus says, do to others, others is like anyone that you may see. So what would it look like for you to live with this golden rule mindset? What would it look like for you, let's say in the next 7 days or through the summer, to live a Jesus-shaped relationship style of relating because you're looking at other people through this lens of the golden rule? What if our church adopted that? How would our region change? How would Mexico change if a team went down there with this golden rule lens of living, of serving people? What if every friend you saw through the eyes of the golden rule and you acted accordingly? What if the people you're going to eat lunch with, if you believe today that those are providential relationships that God sets up, it's no accident you're sitting where you're sitting, it's no accident who you'll be eating lunch with, and that if, what if you were to see them through that golden rule lens? Your fellow students or teachers, the last couple days of school, what if you were to see them with the golden rule eyes? Or your fellow employees at work? Oh, I know the plant is hot and the environment is grouchy, you know, but what if you went into your shifts this week with the attitude of the golden rule? How would that affect how you work there? Or tonight at the dinner table, the people around your table as you're talking, what if the golden rule informed the language that you used in that conversation? Or this week when you're out, let's say the waitress at the restaurant or the clerk at the grocery store, what if you engaged with them with a golden rule type of engagement? How would that look for you? Your employees or your clients that you're going to be making calls on this week, what if you interacted with them with a golden rule interaction? What if every social media post that you posted or you reacted to someone else's post, what if you did that through the golden rule mindset? What if every person, because Jesus said, do to others as you would have them do to you. Every person, whether male or female, whether Christian or Muslim or Sikh or whatever they may be, to do to others, whether they're gay or they're straight, or whether they're rich or they're poor, whoever the person may be, if you were to walk out of here and you say, I'm going to live the next 7 days with this golden rule mindset because Jesus has loved me, I'm filled with this love, I'm going to love others, I'm going to love as Jesus commands me to love. I'm going to live out the golden rule because we look at the cross and we respond to His love that He has given for us, His love that He fills us, and then we live as golden rule lovers. We serve as people who live out the golden rule. We forgive because Jesus has forgiven us. We show mercy because He's shown mercy to us. Church, imagine in our region, imagine in our world what would happen if we all lived out the golden rule as Jesus calls us to. Let's go to prayer. Let's just take a few moments of quiet prayer. I truly believe it's not an accident you're sitting here. God brought you here this morning. That one verse, Matthew 7:12, the summary that Jesus gave us, do to others as you would have them do to you. Who is the other for you this morning? Why don't you ask Him, let Him speak that to you right now? Oh, Jesus, we look at the cross and we're reminded of your incredible love for us. We sing it, we bask in it, we live it. And in a world that's often divisive, full of hate, full of rights, full of a legalistic, law-based way of relating, we want to be children of grace. Children filled with your unconditional love. So we can live out this one rule, this golden rule that you have called us to live. Jesus, I know that it is your presence and it is your power. It is implicit in that verse that enables and empowers and equips us to do that. So we thank you. Thank you that you loved us first. So we can love others and love you back. Amen.